Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. International politics has never been short of examples of policies producing consequences opposite to the intended, or a country's bravado becoming its biggest liability, but rarely has it come together so vividly and massively as in the Gaza conflict. Did it make the West, despite all the violence it underwrites, a hostage of its own scheming? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Syed Mohammed Marandi, professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran and media advisor to the Iranian nuclear negotiating team. Professor Marandi, it's good to see you again. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, first of all, let me start by asking about the connection in your life between being a professor of English literature and one of the most knowledgeable and articulate observers of international affairs, at least as they pertain to Iran. Does your knowledge of English literature inform your analytical acumen in any way?
I think my background in English literature has helped because it gives me a better understanding of American culture and American society, which I think is key to understanding American politics, and also I think an understanding of British culture, society, and history to a lesser degree. The study of Orientalism and the history of the relationship between the West and the non-Western world is very important and very revealing. And even I can say that when we look at the war in Ukraine, you see strong elements of Orientalism and stereotypical elements within the narrative of the West that has existed for hundreds of years.
When it comes to poetics and literature in particular, especially in Eastern countries, they have always been a sort of spiritual domain, not just a mental study of texts and themes, but sort of a portal to imagination, a portal to intuition, and a portal to a certain view of the world that does not only see the material things, but also allows a space and respect for the subtle and often invisible connection between events and between all human beings. I wonder if to some extent this geopolitical battle that we are observing in the world are between the forces who only see the material things and the forces who perhaps see the world in a slightly more expanded way.
In general, the West, having been the center of power for hundreds of years for much of the world, if not almost the whole world, this has created a strong sense of entitlement. There's both Eurocentricism, exceptionalism involved, deeply involved, but also I think the very fact that it's been going on for so long, there is a sense that the West is we have indeed reached the end of history and a sort of Hegelian view, and that the United States is that country which ultimately, as Madeleine Albright once said, the United States stands taller and looks further, and therefore it is essentially superior to the rest of us. We are lesser people than and lesser states than the United States. And therefore, when they sense that they sense that they are superior, then they have exceptional rights. And when they do something which we consider to be evil, they don't consider it to be evil. At most, they'll say it's a mistake. Like in Iraq, by invading the country and destroying the country, they invaded and destroyed the country. They never said that we did evil. At most, they'll say it was a mistake.
Now, I know that you were born and spent your formative teenage years in the United States. And then at a certain point of time, you returned to Iran, you also volunteered to fight in the Iran-Iraq war. You were subjected to two chemical weapons attacks. And I want to ask you, it's a personal question, but I think it's very valid in this day and age. Did you ever have to face a moment of choosing, of making a conscious choice of who you are? Because you had various identities, you had a very abrupt introduction to the multifaceted nature of the world. Did you have to make that conscious choice of who you are and what forces you align yourself with?
When I was young and I was in the United States as a child, you could see that sense of exceptionalism existed throughout society. And when we moved back to Iran after the revolution, I did increasingly see the contradiction between what Americans were saying to themselves and what was happening outside of the United States. Although I was in a politically aware family, even when we were in the United States, but still I was a child. But I think that moment probably was when I saw the United States using chemical weapons, or the West using chemical weapons extensively through Saddam Hussein, when there was a decision made by the West to give Saddam Hussein the technology to make mustard gas and nerve agents to kill many thousands of innocent people, but also many thousands of combatants. I went to the city of Halabja very soon after the gas attack, and I think maybe 6,000 people were killed. The exact numbers have never come out, but there was no condemnation in the West. During that period, those years of war, when I was a volunteer in the war and I would regularly go to the war fronts and I would see the atrocities that Saddam Hussein was carrying out with Western support, I think that changed things for me in a very big way.
Now, the reason why I'm asking is because I think this is actually a type of question that many people around the world, not only on individual, but also on collective basis, have to face now, primarily because of the Gaza issue. And it is quite surprising to me that it would be the Palestinian issue that would galvanize this soul searching of understanding who you ultimately are and what you stand for as a human being or as a nation, because the Palestinian issue has been unresolved for what, over 70 years. Many counted it as essentially a historical anachronism. Why do you think it proved to be such a galvanizing force? And do you see the recent violence as something that will essentially pass over time, as the Antifadas did before, or something that may change things in a more fundamental way?
That's a difficult question. I think there are a number of reasons. One is the general decline of the West and the perpetual wars that we've seen over the last two decades, which has created both anger across the world, but also it's created weakness in the West. And therefore, the West has less control over events in other countries. When they have less control over governments, then the reporting in these countries across the global South begins to shift. It becomes more open and realistic with regards to the behavior of the West. So I think that was important. I think also the war in Ukraine made it even more problematic for the West, because a greater gap was created between the West and major powers like Russia and even China. So you have this global South gradually moving away from the West, and then major powers shifting, especially Russia, shifting away from the West as well. And then you have the rise of social media. Because of the sheer amount of information coming in, it's very difficult for the West to control the narrative anymore. So what is unique in Gaza is that we are now seeing it live. We see it basically, we see the genocide taking place as it happens. And people are shocked to wake up in the morning to see new scenes of devastation and death. Yet at the same time, you're watching Western officials saying that we shouldn't have a ceasefire, now's not the time. And that, I think, is shocking people across the world and even people in the West. And this, I think, is especially important because, as I said, when I was young in the United States, Americans thought very highly of their country. But now I think among young Americans who become disillusioned because of the decline of the United States, because of the constant wars and all the things that I've been alluding to, plus a lot more, they are now more open to new ideas. And they're confronting this reality. And at the same time, they're seeing that the Western media, which is supposed to be open and a symbol of freedom and democracy, they're seeing that the Western media is silent. It is not saying what they're seeing. It's not speaking about and discussing what they're seeing with their own eyes.
Absolutely. I think the gap between impulse perception and the actual reality is so hard that, you know, no sane person can believe. I mean, even if they tried for self-preservation purposes, it's very hard to do that. Now, as sane people, we have to take a very short break right now to process what we have just discussed, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Из националистических батальонов, они сразу пришли на Донбасс убивать, пришли на Донбасс грабить, насиловать.
Это были пытки, это были очень жесткие допросы. То есть людей ломали конкретно.
Украинские националисты не воспринимали жителей Востока Украины в качестве полноценных украинцев.
Для чего они убили вот эту женщину, мою мать? Разве она жить не хотела? Хотела жить. Интересно, их мамы хотят жить?
Больше 90% пришло на референдум и проголосовало в поддержку Донецкой Народной Республики.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Syed Mohammed Marandi, professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran and media advisor to Iranian nuclear negotiating team. Now, Professor Marandi, before the break, you described the trends that make the confluence of events that make the Gaza conflict unique. It's no longer possible to turn a blind eye to it. And I'm sure whatever you think of Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli prime minister, he's also a pretty cunning and watchful politician. He's been in politics for a long time. He has a team of advisors, so he should be keeping his tabs on what's going on. And yet, I've heard many experts say that the purpose of Hamas's raid on October 7th was to deliberately provoke Israel into a disproportionate response, a response that would be beyond the pale. And it seems that the Israeli leadership did take that bait. My question to you is, do you think that's a failure of judgment on Netanyahu's part, a personal mistake, or do you think that's a failure of the system, that is, the Israeli state as it exists today?
I think it is similar to the problem that exists in the United States. The United States political establishment lives in a bubble. they continue to think that they are the most important country in the world by far, that they can defeat all of their opponents because they are exceptional, because they are destined to be different.
They're godlike. I think that's the most appropriate description of their perception of themselves.
So Israel, the Israeli regime, is very similar. They see themselves as God's chosen people. Even those who are secular in Israel somehow they believe in something which they don't believe exists, paradoxically. They're not religious, but they somehow believe that they're exceptional. That sense of arrogance and that sense of exceptionalism in Israel, I think, creates a complacency that is similar to what we see in the United States. And so the Israelis don't consider the Palestinians to be human beings equal to them with capabilities, who can be brilliant. And I think that's what basically destroyed this whole narrative about this invincible Israeli army or Israeli intelligence gathering. They've been outsmarted by the Palestinians. The defense mechanisms and the means in which they're defending their territory in Gaza shows that the people in Hamas and Islamic Jihad are very resourceful, very smart, and very different from what the Israelis imagine them to be.
I think the Gaza conflict, to some extent, validated the Iranian narrative, the Iranian view of the Israeli state, that it is an ethnocentric ideological entity that exploits Jewish history or Jewish spirituality for political purposes of Zionism. And there are many more people, not just in Iran, who question whether the state of Israel in its current shape or form, in which it equates its own right to defend itself to the wholesale destruction of its neighbors, whether such a state has the right to exist. What are your thoughts on this issue? Do you think it will get a sort of a broader hearing?
Yes, I think that the greatest defeat that the Israeli regime has suffered is not on the battlefield, even though it has lost on the battlefield during these 3-4 months. But the greatest defeat was actually created by the regime itself, by killing so many people, by carrying out all these massacres, by creating this genocide. Even young anti-Israeli Jews in the United States are speaking of it as a Holocaust. And one of the very important elements, by the way, in this shifting narrative that we're seeing across the world is the fact that many of the key opponents of this genocide and of the Israeli regime are young Jews, especially in the United States. Their activism is extraordinary, and they are playing a very heroic role in this struggle for justice. So I think what the Israeli regime is delegitimizing itself in the eyes of the international community by not only viewing the Palestinian people and presenting them as inferior and subhuman, but also by explicitly speaking about Palestinians being subhuman and speaking about the intention to carry out genocide. And it is very significant that the country that went out and came out and complained to the international community and went to the ICJ was actually South Africa. The country that was also an apartheid regime where a minority ruled over a majority that was presented as subhuman and less human than themselves.
It is pretty clear that Israel in its current form wouldn't have been able to exist without substantial American military and political support, which for decades thought to advance America's own pretty cynical material interest in the region. But I heard you say recently that at this point you believe that America's standing by Israel goes against its own core interest. Why so?
Well, a case can be made that during the Cold War, Israel had benefits to the United States, and it was helpful to preserve U.S. domination in West Asia and North Africa. That's debatable. I'm not sure I agree with that. But in any case, over recent decades, the Israeli regime has become increasingly its existence detrimental to Western interests. And I think the best example is the current genocide that we're seeing in Gaza. The West, this is not being seen across the world as just simply a genocide being carried out by Israel. They're seeing this as a Western genocide. They're seeing this as a United States-led genocide against the Palestinian people. And it is creating enormous animosity across the region and across the world. At a time when the United States is increasing tensions with China, at a time when it's antagonistic towards Russia, the United States and the Europeans can no longer speak about human rights to anyone. They cannot speak about human rights to North Korea, because as soon as they say a single sentence, everyone will respond and say, we just witnessed the most horrific crimes being committed on our cell phones.
I don't think you should even give credence to American utterances about human rights, because, I mean, it's not just the recent developments. I mean, you yourself mentioned the Iran-Iraq war and the use of chemical weapons against civilians. So it's, I think, in a way, we are sort of supporting this American mantra that they supposedly care, when if you look at how they conduct their wars, it's like it's plain for anyone to draw conclusions. Now, I want to ask you, though, about the strategy.
I just want to add something, though, is that you're absolutely correct. The Americans created ISIS. The Americans, I mean, the list, we can go on for hours. But the point is an awareness has been created today by what has been done in Gaza with regards to the West that is unprecedented. And the West is seen by everyone as carrying out this genocide. So Israel, through its selfish interests, is not just destroying Israel. It's not only destroying the so-called legitimacy of Israel in the eyes of the world, but it's destroying the whole of the Western project, the whole of the notion of Western civilization and somehow Western civilization being exceptional or the greatest civilization. Now people are looking down at the West. They're saying that you are the cause of misery. And then all those other crimes that you've alluded to, people are waking up to that as well. They're doing research and then discovering Yemen. They're discovering Iraq. They're discovering chemical weapons. They're discovering what happened in Latin America. Because once a country or a regime has been exposed, then people who are working actively against its policies start learning about other things that that regime or those groups of countries have been doing.
Now, can I bring us back to your point that the Americans have been essentially put into a position where they don't want to be? I mean, they have to be there because of their previous pronouncements, but they really hate being there. Are there any other actors apart from Israel that would want to keep the United States in the region, wasting its resources, wasting its credibility, but still being there in this sort of suspended position when they cannot leave and they cannot do anything effectively?
That is a very good question, because on the one hand, the resistance across the region wants a ceasefire. Everyone wants an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. But at the same time, the fact that this war continues, we see that it is hurting the Israeli regime and its allies more than anyone else. So it's a sort of paradoxical situation. Everyone wants the war to end, but the side that insists that the war continue, meaning the United States, Israel, and some Western countries that are aligned to it, they are undermining themselves because they are cementing hatred towards the United States. Every day that goes by only makes this new world order or this multipolar world that everyone has been talking about become more important in the eyes of the world. The global South increasingly looks for ways to realign themselves. public opinion becomes more assertive in opposing the West. And Israel grows weaker. I've been to China twice in the past 3 months. And before the war, the Chinese were ambivalent about Israel. Perhaps most Chinese had positive views of Israel. Now, it's almost universal that the Chinese look down upon Israel. They see it as barbaric. They see it as inhumane. So the world has changed.
Now, there is one more very cynical question I want to ask you. And this is about the situation in the Red Sea with the attacks of the Houthi forces. And it is one thing everybody has discussed that the United States can do pretty little about these attacks. They, with all their might, they have not been able to contain them. But I think there's another overlooked dimension, and it is that the situation added another group of stakeholders to this whole conflict, not only conscientious people of the world who can be very distressed about the suffering of the people in Gaza, but in realistic terms can do very little about it too. But there are also the millionaires and billionaires with interest in international shipping and transborder manufacturing and global trade who are losing money because of that. There's also large constituencies in the West who, with prices going up and people not being able to sell or to get goods on time. Do you think these financial interests, and they are measured in many, many zeros, do you think they are influential enough to move politics around this issue?
I don't think in future countries across the global South will be looking to Israel for high-tech products, because Israel has failed in Gaza with regards to intelligence gathering. They won't be looking to Israel for weapons because Israel has failed against small groups. And many countries like China, they won't be investing in Israel anymore because they don't see it as a safe place for investment. When you see, and this is, it's sort of poetic justice that the United States and the Europeans, Canada, France, Germany, Britain, they helped carry out the genocide in Yemen for a decade. And they used the Red Sea to create, to impose a starvation siege. And now it is Yemen, this country that has been beaten and battered, that is standing firmly and saying that we will not allow you to carry out this genocide. We will blockade this port. And the Americans in the West can't do anything about it. If the United States and the West had behaved normally towards non-Western countries, if they had treated countries with respect, we wouldn't have this situation. But now when Yemen is standing steadfast against the West, and Yemen being so poor and impoverished, imagine how vulnerable the United States is elsewhere in the world. And now the United States is contemplating a major air campaign against the Iraqi resistance, a resistance that's opposed to the U.S. illegal occupation in Syria and Iraq, and their support for ISIS and their support for Israel. So once this air campaign happens, are the Americans going to win in Iraq and Syria? No, they're only going to make it worse for themselves because they're going to make the resistance in Iraq more popular. They are going to respond to the Americans, and so they'll show the world that the Americans are not as strong as they claim to be. And this sends messages across the world. People across the world are saying, well, then this superpower, or what someone once called a hyperpower, is not really all that strong. So business people will be seeking solutions for their own interests. The world will be seeing the United States as much weaker than it claims to be.
Professor Mirande, unfortunately, we have to wrap it up. We are out of time, but it's been always, as always, a great pleasure and great honor for me to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
You're very kind. Thank you very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.